Ben Ray, welcome once again to The Signal.
Thanks for inviting me.
And as usual, you have brought a big pile of what look to be very interesting reads for the summer. What would you like to start with today?
Let's start talking about The Martian by Andy Weir. It's a novel that is set mostly on Mars, and it'll have you believing that a man might actually be able to survive on Mars. So it's sort of like, let's take MacGyver and mix it with Robinson Crusoe on Mars. And that's essentially what you've got. A Martian mission goes wrong. Guy gets left behind. And he has to rig together with the remaining science over a period of days to survive until they can come back and get him, if they even discover that he's there in the first place. So
now, is it set in the present or the not-too-distant future? Or kind
yeah,
of
it's
vague
the
about
not
that?
Too distant future. I mean, there's still some jokes about disco and Happy Days and things like that in there. So you know that they're not that far into the future. The character, Mark Watley, is very likable. He's an amiable sort of guy. It's kind of like if you saw the movie Gravity and really found yourself rooting against the Sandra Bullock character, this is sort of the complete opposite of that. You're actually really rooting for Watley to survive. Right.
Okay. Well, that seems like fun.
And so The Martian is loaded with like a lot of it's loaded with a lot of tech, but it's very readable tech. I have a friend that works for Jet Propulsion Labs, and she was part of the team that worked on the Martian rover that actually plays a role in the plot in this novel. And so we asked her to read the book just to get her feedback, and she said, "No, it's actually pretty believable, pretty solid stuff." So
the guy
that Andy Weir who did this evidently spent a lot of time paying attention to the science of this to make sure that it all seems very feasible and possible, and it does. So it's basically a thrill ride. You're going to pick it up, perfect summer reading. You're not going to be able to put it down. When you do put it down, anytime you see it out of the corner of your eye, you're going to want to pick it back up again and start reading it because it's that intense in a really fun sort of way.
Well, and this next book has sort of an interesting story to go along with the interesting story within the book, huh?
Right. So this is California, the novel, by Eden Lepucki. And it is basically, it's a post-apocalyptic or actually kind of an ongoing apocalypse sort of scenario about a woman, a young couple that leave the deterioration of Los Angeles for the wilds. And she gets pregnant and then they find they have to rejoin a community. And in a lot of sort of apocalyptic tales, you find the scariest aspects of the world in an apocalypse sort of scenario is other people.
Yes.
And so that part becomes really creepy. Her prose is really nice. It's very readable. It's a fun sort of apocalypse in a really creepy, uncanny way. But the idea here is this is published by Little Brown and Company, which is a subsidiary of Hachette. And they are the company that's been having problems with Amazon. And Amazon won't let people pre-order this book. And so in the book world, pre-orders can help determine whether or not you're going to be a bestseller. So
right.
what people are trying to do is get everybody to either order or pre-order this book to send Amazon a message that you can't push around publishers and authors, and to send a message to publishers and authors that maybe you don't need to rely on Amazon so much to make things bestsellers.
Cool.
So people are encouraging this book. I think the Colbert Report did a big thing on this book. You can order it online from a number of other places that aren't Amazon. You can buy it at all of your friendly local bookstores. You can even pre-order it from your friendly local bookstores.
Interesting.
And help make it a bestseller. But the thing is, it wouldn't work if it wasn't a good book.
Right.
It's a good book.
It's nice when those two things come together.
Yes, it is. Otherwise, remember that book you recommended that I tried? It was,
yeah, not so good. So, well, here's something that I've heard a little bit about, and I've always been a little bit mystified by the popularity of this particular character, but I understand you feel differently about it.
Well, okay, to be fair, one of the first comics as a kid that I started reading was Archie Comics. I don't know what the appeal was. It didn't make sense that Betty and Veronica would fight over Archie the way that they did. He was not an attractive character. Jughead was somewhat amusing. Reggie was always predictably bad. I didn't really understand it, but I was attracted to it as
mm-hmm.
a kid. But what they have done is ingeniously taken the Archie universe and infected Riverdale with a zombie plague. So it's called, the title of the book is called Afterlife with Archie. And people will frequently come into Atomic and say, hey, what comics are you reading on a regular basis? Like, what are you really into? And when I tell them, okay, there's this Archie comic you have to read, I get the most, I get the weirdest looks from people like, all right, you are putting me on. I have to read an Archie comic, seriously. It is some of the most heart-wrenching, well-thought-out. I've had people, like, after I've recommended this, come back and talk to me about how well thought out all of the plot lines and details were. You see all of your favorite Archie characters just go through a zombie horror movie, essentially. And no, they don't all survive. So it's not necessarily the current Archie universe as we know it with comics. It's kind of like this little side pocket. But Riverdale gets hit by a zombie plague. When you find out how, you'll say to yourself, oh, duh, of course, that's exactly what would happen. And when you get to the fourth act, you may find yourself tearing up a little bit. It was pretty intense. And I put it, people that are fans of The Walking Dead, I put this on par with The Walking Dead.
Wow, okay.
In terms of quality zombie, and it's in color, which The Walking Dead comics are not.
Right,
so, and
that's a ringing endorsement, so... Well, and this is an interesting topic, I think, that people come to from so many different ways, through the movies or through professional wrestling. There's a lot of different ways to make your way to Andre the Giant. This way, you can do it with a book.
Right. So this is Andre the Giant, Life and Legend by Box Brown. And this is a comic biography of the iconic wrestler who was also, you know, became hugely famous for Princess Bride. One of the largest people to have ever existed. He had, of course, a disease that would eventually kill him at a young age because of it. He's a terribly tragic figure to a certain extent. He's a very lonely figure. This biography looks at his life as a child up through his wrestling career, up through his movie career. It gives you a lot of really interesting background explanation on some of the aspects of wrestling, like how he got involved with American wrestling, his relationship with like Hulk Hogan and how he helped his career. There was a point in which Andre turned and played a villain, and there's some explanation about that and why. But it's not one of those feel-good sort of mushy pieces. Andre was a complex character. He wasn't always pleasant, and Box Brown does a great job of making this a whole realistic, like a complete character and not just a fan's portrayal. When I was a kid, I was fortunate enough to get to see Andre wrestle. And before we went to see him wrestle, my father would say, just wait when you see him. He is so huge. He steps over the top rope to get into the ring. And as a kid, I was like, well, steps over the top rope, whatever. I don't know what that means. And then you get there and you see all the other guys going, pulling and climbing in between the middle ropes. And then Andre the Giant walks up and just steps over the top rope. And you're like, oh,
he really
is
a giant.
A mammoth. Yes, and it was fortunate. It was a fortunate part of my life that I actually got to see him wrestle, and this book really brings him to life in a really wonderful way.
Wow, and now we're moving on to a more, I don't know if I could say serious topics, Maryland history, but not exactly the most fuddy-duddy Maryland history, perhaps.
Well, yeah, there's two. One is slightly less serious, and the other one is kind of goofy.
Yeah.
All right, so every year there's always a couple of really good Maryland history books that come out that I think as somebody that lives in Maryland, you know, obviously I'm interested. I think there are a number of other people that will be interested. I spent a significant portion of my life on the Eastern Shore. As a kid, my family would go and vacation in Ocean City. So when Monica Trash and Brandon Seidel came out with the Trimper's Rides book, I was immediately fascinated by it. Trimper's Rides is a substantial entertainment portion of Ocean City. If you've ever been down on the boardwalk, you're familiar with who they are, where they are, what they've done, their haunted house, the carousel, et cetera, et cetera. And this is essentially a history of a family of a German immigrant who came to Baltimore, opened a bar, and then had the opportunity to take advantage of a fledgling little community down on the Eastern Shore of Maryland on the waterfront, bought some property, and eventually grew it into Trimper's Rides. And his family has continued to manage and upgrade and take care of the thing over the take care of the project over the years. And it's loaded with photos, history, everything. It's great just looking at some of the older attractions, like I remember as a child, and how they've changed over the years.
Yeah.
And it's a great American Dream sort of story. And if you can't make it to Ocean City this summer, this is probably the next best thing you can do.
Well, and this looks like a little more, perhaps more serious.
No, this is super serious.
Yeah.
We're talking about monsters and ghosts. And all right, so it's Maryland Legends Folklore from the Old Line State, and it's a Maryland history book by Trevor J. Blank and David J. Puglia. And basically, it just looks at all of the different folklore histories, history from all over the Maryland area. So you have your Black Aggie, which was the statue that was haunted. You have your Hell House at St. Mary's College. You have your Blue Dog at Port of Tobacco, which is one of Maryland's earliest sort of legendary haunting stories. The Snallygaster, which started off as like this flying sort of dragon thing and eventually devolved into a Bigfoot, which turned out was just a local newspaper hoax.
Snallygaster.
And it goes all the way up through more recent times when we were dealing with things like the Poe Toaster, who would visit Poe's grave and do a toast up until a few years ago. And it explains a little bit about who they think was responsible or at least helping with the theatrics of that. And it ties back to the Poe House and a bunch of other things, too. But it's a great resource for a wide variety of all kinds of folklore, like stories that I heard when I was a kid about bridges, haunted bridges, Seven Hills Road, where if you go over the one hill at midnight on a certain night, you'll get hit by a demon car. All of these stories my parents told me when I was a kid I'm not sure why, just to scare me maybe, are in here, plus more that I had never heard. It's a great look at folklore from our history, and it provides us with some real historical sort of background of where the stories came from and what the reality behind some of the stories were.
Right. Well, and this looks like a refreshing book. You always bring something that has to do with food or drink or something or other.
Right. So this one is called The Old Fashioned by Robert Simonson, and it's a history of the world's first classic cocktail, which is the Old Fashioned. It's a very simple cocktail. Depending on who you talk to, it's basically just whiskey, sugar, water, bitters, and a twist of lemon. Or it has a whole bunch of fruit in it, or maybe it has, I don't know, absinthe in it, or maybe somebody has put creme de menthe, or who knows. It's been a royally abused, degraded, and humiliated cocktail. It's as old as, or it's actually older than the martini, and it has suffered a far worse history than the martini, except that now it's starting to get recognized again and treated with a certain amount of respect. I was at a bar recently talking to our mayor, and she and I don't necessarily agree on a whole lot, but one of the things that we do agree on is you can judge a bar's quality by the quality of the old fashioned that they serve.
That's interesting.
That's a theory that I subscribe to. I started drinking it a few years ago. I had an uncle, and that was his drink, right? He was a lot older, but he would always drink an old fashioned. And the year he died, I decided I was going to drink an old fashioned after he died. Just as a way of celebrating. And I was like, whoa, this is actually really good. And I don't think I'd ever had one before. And so from that point on, I had started drinking old fashions on a regular basis. It also seems to have coordinated with right around the same time that Mad Men, has brought the drink back.
The old fashioned looks nice in John Hamm's hand.
Yes. And there is a section in the book called The Mad Men Factor that deals with that. But it's primarily, I mean, yeah, there are recipes, but it's primarily a cultural history of America's, of the world's first cocktail. And it's fascinating.
Well, here's a title that I'm much more familiar with online. Pitchfork is something I think of as existing only in the internets.
Right. But if it only exists in the internet, does it really exist?
I've often wondered that myself.
And the fact that this exists as a print publication tells me that there's a flaw in that thinking. So what Pitchfork has been doing is, this is the second volume, they're putting out a quarterly review called the Pitchfork Review. And it's a beautifully put together, full color, perfectly bound magazine with articles not only from the website itself, but some new content. It's also loaded with a bunch of really cool alternative comics. And then in the case of this one, it comes with a 45 by Kurt Vile and Watery Love. So you've got this whole sort of package of good old-fashioned magazine reading, not online. You can leave it on your coffee table, and every time you walk by, you'll want to pick it up and thumb through it, and your friends will too. And it has a lot of great stuff with everything from, like, an article about Ellen Willis, the old music critic, to Sun Kil Moon's new album, Benji, talking about Kate Bush, Stanley Kubrick's Infinite Playlist, et cetera, et cetera. It's a beautifully designed package that shows the distinct. I still read Pitchfork online. Mm-hmm. I'm collecting all of these. It shows a clear, distinct difference between the two.
Sure, and it, I mean, you think of Pitchfork. I think of Pitchfork as the, you know, everyone wants a good review of their record in Pitchfork because it can make or break your right. release. So you want them, but I really think of them as being very much that kind of nuts and bolts kind of music reviews. But this shows there's a lot more going on there than I've dug into, I guess.
Right. Yeah. And they have a feature section. I personally also am the same way. Whenever I go to Pitchfork, I just go right to the reviews because I really don't care who Kanye is called what recently. but I am curious to see how like Ed Schrader's new album is doing on
sure.
Pitchfork.
Sure. Yeah.
But this isn't reviews. This, I mean, it says review in the title. But these are like feature articles and yeah. interviews and essays. And the pedigree is pretty good. It's the people that are working on this have come from a background of zines and other publications like Stop Smiling.
Yeah, it's really good looking.
So it's they've done a wonderful job. You'll want, I mean, people that see it that care about this sort of thing, you'll want to pick one of these up and collect them because they look great on a bookshelf, they look great on a coffee table, and it's something, let's say you're waiting 5 minutes to leave the house because you're waiting on someone for whatever reason, it's the perfect thing to pick up and thumb through.
Yeah. Well, now this is a first for your selections, I think. I believe in all the history of the books you've talked about, you've never brought in an audiobook.
Right. But I figured people might be taking road trips.
Yes.
And you might pass some people hitchhiking from time to time. So my recommendation right now is if you're taking a long road trip and you've run out of podcasts, and I know that's difficult because it seems like everybody you know has a podcast.
Right.
But you've run out of podcasts and you want to listen to something that's kind of fun, pick up Carsick, the audiobook by John Waters. John reads the book himself, and it's the best thing. It's the closest you're going to get to actually picking up John Waters hitchhiking and taking him on a road trip with you, which is what he did 2 years ago, which yeah. is what the book is about.
Yeah, that's amazing. I mean, I've heard him talk about this on a couple of different shows, and he's just, it's so funny to hear him talking about his adventures and his sort of like, while not encouraging people to go out and hitchhike, also not discouraging them from going on hitchhiking or picking up hitchhikers along the way.
So we get mail for John fan mail, and we've gotten fan mail from hitchhikers who have gotten picked up now as a result of this book. They didn't even know that this book was out, but somebody had heard about the book on NPR and heard John talking about the book and decided, well, I'm going to pick up a hitchhiker. And they picked up this hitchhiker and gave him a ride, and he was very appreciative. So he sent a letter thanking John for that. And I have heard John just come right out and say you should hitchhike. So I hope that works out.
Yeah, I know that's sort of a mixed. I'm myself. I'm not comfortable sending that message. But then I think John has made a lifestyle out of sending out messages that I would not be particularly comfortable sending out myself.
And plus, he's put his money where his mouth is. I mean, he hitchhiked from Baltimore to San Francisco in a summer and has the book to show for it.
Yeah.
So like I said, if you've got a road trip and you want something to listen to, this is like having John Waters in the car with you. This is like, hey, I've just picked him up hitchhiking and now he's telling me his story about hitchhiking. It's a great experience. It's a great way to experience the book.
Yeah, that seems a lot of fun. Well, Ben, once again, you've given me a lot to consider here, and our listeners too. I thank you for your time and energy, and thanks for coming in today.
As always, thank you for inviting me.
Ben Ray is co-owner of Atomic Books in Hamden. To see a list of books he spoke about today, plus a few extras we didn't have time for, visit Signal Radio Baltimore on Facebook. For The Signal, I'm Lisa Morgan.